starting the first day of the month of Damodar, I began going through the Damodar Lila, Canto 10, Chapter 9. And so far, we've covered through verse number 6. And just a little review where we ended up. The pastime itself is celebrated and mysterious. I know the parts that are... We're not expecting anybody, but maybe you are. Okay. The girls don't speak English, huh?
Russian, yeah.
Huh?
They speak Russian.
They speak no English.
A little bit.
So what about school?
The older one, she's started first grade. Yeah, and she learned.
Okay. It must be difficult for them.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll begin because of the time, and I'll speak a little bit loud so you all can hear. The Damodar pastime is found in Canto 10, Chapter 9. And since November 1st, when the Damodar month began, we started discussing the verses and the commentaries of our acharyas to help us more deeply enter into the mood and the message of the Damodar pastime. So most celebrated, a question has come up several times already. Why are we spending so much time on one pastime, a whole month, discussing the Damodar pastime? What's so special about it? And what's special about it is several things. But the primary message in the beginning part of this pastime is the super excellent love of Mother DeSoto. Because chapter 8 of Canto 10 is entitled The Childhood Pastimes. And the whole chapter is speaking about the parental affection or vatsalya rasa of all the elder gopis and some of the elder gopas, but mainly it's the gopis, the elder gopis, and how they interacted with Krishna in his childhood pastimes. So it starts, he's not even 5 years old yet. He's not even... Yeah. He's not even 3 years, 4 months old yet. He's... Because they later is when the devotees from the elders moved from Gokul to Vrindavan. That was when he was 3 years, 4 months, and that was right after this pastime, the knocking over of the twin Arjuna trees, and the elders get together and say, you know what, it's too dangerous here for our children. It's spooky, troubles. Let's move. And they give their reasons why. And so the moving happens after this pastime. So he's about 3 years old, around 3 years old. No picture in your mind. He's toddling. He's beyond the stage of crawling. But in chapter 8, he's still crawling. He's learning to crawl. And it's really fun because he doesn't crawl in a straight line. He goes zigzag. And so many that the parents having affection. He hears the tinkling sound of their ankle ornaments, and he thinks that's his mother. But when he finds out it's not his mother, he becomes startled and runs back to his mother, and Balaram runs back to Rohini. They're behaving like little children. And then once he starts walking, then comes the stealing of butter pastimes. And there's a whole long section on that and how the gopis feel motherly affection for Krishna and so forth and so on. And then we heard in the course of chapter 8 that Krishna wanted to be scolded. And Radha found that very astonishing. That, what? He wanted to be scolded. But it's a type of loving affection between mother and child when it's called for, that there's some scolding, some admonishment for something that's unwholesome, that's hurtful, harmful. So his stealing butter was one. Then his eating dirt was another. And at the end of that section, Shukadev Goswami says, completely amazing, the love, the affection of Mother Yashoda for Krishna is so strong she couldn't even see what she saw. She just went on the other side of what she saw inside Krishna's mouth. And then Maharaj Parikshit says, wow, what pious activities did Nanda and Yashoda perform in order to become entitled to have this kind of love for Krishna? And the answer is given, something to do with expansions of Yashoda and Nanda. From the spiritual world, they expand themselves in the heavenly region, heavenly realm, Drona and Dara, and that story of Drona and Dara is told in the austerities that they underwent. But this chapter begins with Yashoda and Nanda. They're not, it's not a post that somebody can attain. Like Brahma's a post, or Indra's a post, or the demigods, there's a post, and somebody can attain that post or position. But they're eternally in that position. They're direct expansions of Krishna's Shakti. They're not Jiva Tattva, they're Shakti Tattva. They're special extensions of Krishna's own potency. And so at the beginning of the chapter, Shukadev starts narrating. This is the topic is very deep and not easy to understand, but someone like you, Maharaj Parikshit, you're very eager to understand and very eager to hear, and so I'm obliged, I'll explain to you the detail of this, the mystery of this pastime. So then the pastime begins, where it's Diwali Day. Diwali Day comes once a year in the Vaishnava calendar during this Damodar month. And it's during, like we just had the full moon, the Purnima. So after the Purnima, so many days, 14 days, and it becomes a new moon. And 3 days, 4 days after the new moon is when Diwali comes. And Diwali is a pastime that's connected with Ramchandra's pastimes. But on Diwali Day, it's a big festival. So on that big festival day, Mother Yashoda decided that she would make the butter for Krishna, because in chapter 8, we heard he's going around stealing butter. And it must be that they don't know how to make butter. So she did. And she took milk from 7-8 special cows, fed them special grasses that produced a certain flavor of milk, so she could have especially flavorful milk to make milk products. in addition to milk, there was boiling the milk. She was going to make some sweets. She turned the milk into yogurt and was churning the yogurt, singing songs of Krishna, some spontaneous songs and some songs the other residents of, because they would sing a lot. It's a very musical tradition. And they would just sing songs of Krishna, of his pastimes. Because up to this stage, Krishna had performed many wonderful pastimes. And she was singing songs of those pastimes with her. The description is there, a beautiful description of the scene. How she was dressed, the jasmine flowers in her hair, the decorations on her body, the bangles on her arms, the perspiration on her forehead, her labor, and so forth and so on. Very, very beautiful description. Yellow-looking sari, large eyebrows, smiling, thinking on she's making this for Krishna. And meanwhile, Krishna is asleep in another room. So that's the scene opens. And then as Krishna wakes up, he doesn't cry. Some children cry when they wake up. But he doesn't cry. He just toddles over to where Mother Jasoda is churning the yogurt. And he grabs a hold of the churning rod. And she smiles because she understands, boy, is he clever. He knows exactly how to tell me, although he can't speak yet, how to stop that and feed me. So she takes Krishna on, she stops. She takes Krishna on her lap. She looks at Krishna's eyes. Krishna looks at her eyes. He smiles. She smiles. He smiles, seeing her smile. She smiles more, seeing his smiling more. And it's a very loving darshan of one another, and she begins feeding him from her breast milk. And over in another room, not far, but in vision, is a stove. And on the stove is some milk that she spent the whole day yesterday gathering to make some milk sweets, and the milk started to boil over. And so she had to decide what to do. She had multiple tasks as a mother. And one of them was feeding her son, and the other was rescuing the milk. You know, it's multiple things to do, and you have to decide. Prabhupada explains, it's one of his purports. In this service to Krishna, we have multiple things to do, and we have to decide which comes first and which comes second, and we have to prioritize. And he explains, it's an important lesson, so that's why I'm mentioning it, that when we're engaged in trying to please Krishna, and that's going to be tomorrow morning's discussion, by the way, how to please Krishna topic, inspired by Krishna from within, she did a rational choice. She, if the milk boils over and it's spoiled, and it's very special milk, and I can come back and feed Krishna after I rescue the milk. So she went to rescue the milk. But Krishna, although he directed her from within her heart to go rescue the milk, he feigned or pretended to be angry. And so when she left, he made a face. He showed anger in his face. He bit his lip with his teeth. He broke the pot for churning yogurt. And he went to go steal butter in the storeroom. That's how far we got. So now it's the next verse, the next two verses, text 7 and text 8. Text 7 reads, Mother Yashoda, after taking down the hot milk from the oven, returned to the churning spot. And when she saw that the container of yogurt was broken and that Krishna was not present, she concluded that the breaking of the pot was the work of Krishna. She used her reasoning faculties. So we're told over and over again, don't speculate. But we use our reasoning faculty. She left with Krishna there. The yogurt pot is broken. Krishna's not there anymore. Deductively, she understood. Krishna broke the pot. Purport. Seeing the pot broken and Krishna not present, Yashoda definitely concluded that the breaking of the pot was the work of Krishna. There was no doubt about it. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, taking the cooked milk, Sushka Paya, from the stove, she entered the room where she was churning the yogurt and saw the strong, shiny pot broken. Understanding that this was the work of her son, she put her forefinger to her nose, laughing. Jiva Goswami writes, Shrushtram means well-cooked. She saw the broken pot and understood that he had done it, since no one else would do it, since the hole was made skillfully, and since it was possible that he was angry. But not seeing him there, she laughed because of his fickle nature, his skill in breaking the pot, his running away in fear, and because of the sound of moving pots and his ankle bells in the next room. So the our acharyas use this word fickle a lot. And I don't know if you know what that word fickle means. Kind of, it's the implication of it is a restlessness, a kind of frivolous, childish behavior, and just a little appreciation. There's a detail about this. Two details. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, we find a description. Krishna Das Kaviraj gives a description of 33 sanchari bhavas. Sanchari bhava means steady ecstasy. There's steady ecstasy comes after a sudden burst of ecstasy that subsides quickly. Kind of like comparing an ocean where there's waves. So there's an ocean of rasa, bhakti rasa. The spiritual world is bhakti rasa. That's Rupa Goswami's conclusion. And rasa is like an ocean where there's waves that rise and then they fall, and then smaller waves that rise and fall, and some of those waves mix with other waves. And when you have all the bhavas, the waves of ecstasy, expressions of ecstasy mix with one another, that's what prema is by definition. See it the other way. Prema is a mixture of different rasas interacting with one another in such a way that it produces prema. So this fickleness is one of those. It's an ecstasy. And not only devotees find ecstasy in relation of their dealings with Krishna, Krishna finds ecstasy in his relationships with other devotees, including the Mother Yashoda or the elder gopis. But it's a childish stage. When he becomes a little older, he doesn't do the fickle things, the restless, childish, silly things. But it's part of his childhood pastimes. And when the gopis see it, they love it. They're delighted. I mean, you know, they sometimes will speak about it, speak to one another, speak to Mother Yashoda. You know what your son does? Da 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 da. But it's it's not, they're not complaining, they're enjoying the nature of his, he's very clever, and he finds different ways of just doing very silly things. I'll give one example that I like. It's found when the elders are moving from Gokul to Vrindavan, and they put everything, all their property, everything, onto bola carts within 24 hours, and they're uprooting their whole homes and everything and all their paraphernalia in one day. But the bola carts have to cross the river. So Mother Jasoda and Rohini are on a large cart, so they, the little boys won't get wet, and they're, the two boys are on the cart with Mother Jasoda and Rohini. And so Krishna is doing this fickle thing. He says, why are those trees moving? And Mother Jasoda says, the trees aren't moving, the cart is moving, the trees are standing still. And Krishna will say, what kind of tree is that? The one that has a long beard? And, you know, there's a certain kind of a tree that has a leaf that grows down and has a point to it, looks like a beard, you know, a man with a beard. So she gives the name. So, and on and on and on. He's behaving like a little boy would behave with his mother. And then, you know, then he taunts Balaram, and Balaram taunts him back, and they're behaving just like little boys. There's details of this described by Jiva Goswami and Gopal Champu. It's for the pleasure of his mothers. And for their own pleasure, they enjoy. They enjoy giving pleasure to their mothers. The mothers enjoy seeing these pastimes of Krishna and talking about them and singing about them and so on. So she laughed, seeing this broken yogurt pot. Just see his fickle nature. I had to go just for a moment and get the milk off the stove and look at this. Oh, this boy. Sanatan Goswami writes, Yashoda immediately took the milk from the fire. She saw that the yogurt was flowing from the pot and understood that Krishna had done this. No one else would desire to do this or was capable of doing this. Not seeing him there, she laughed because it displayed his fickle nature, his skill in breaking the pot, and because he had fled in fear. She quietly pursued him on her tiptoes. She was sneaking up to catch him. Next text, text 8. Krishna at that time was sitting on an upside down wooden mortar for grinding spices and was distributing milk preparations such as yogurt and butter to the monkeys as he liked. Because of having stolen, he was looking all around with great anxiety, suspecting that he might be chastised by his mother, Yashoda. Upon seeing him, she very cautiously approached him from behind. Now this is another scene. His eyes, as he's doing mischief, he's looking this way, looking that way. Very similar description to when the elders would come to Mother Jasoda's home and said, in front of Krishna, do you know what your boy does? And they would tell this and that, and Krishna's looking at them, looking at Mother Jasoda with fear in his eyes, as if she may reprimand him. Although that's the pastime was because he wanted that. He was feigning, or he was actually feeling those emotions. So here he's doing it again. He's feeding butter and yogurt to the monkeys, feeling he's going to be caught. So his eyes were anxiously looking here and there. Vishwanath writes, from the footprints smeared with yogurt, from the sound of his jingling bells and the noise in the other room, Yashoda could guess that Krishna was in the room eating butter. Surmising that, her face broke into a smile. A few seconds later, she decided to go into the room. But by that time, Krishna had left by the back door and gone into the yard. He sat with crossed legs on the top of an overturned mortar for fear of crows and other animals. The verse describes from this point. Having stolen the pot hanging from the ceiling, he had brought it there. He was afraid of being beaten by his mother for having stolen the butter, and therefore he was looking around in fear, looking for a path of escape. Seeing him from inside the room, and by craning her neck, she then very softly approached him from behind, so that he could not see her without making noise from her footsteps in order to catch him in her hands. Jiva Goswami writes, from fear of crows and other animals, he sat in a swastika asana on an overturned mortar. After going into the storeroom and eating some butter, he took the pot, which had been hanging from a rope, which indicates his cleverness, and went behind the house in by the back door to a solitary place to fool his mother. His mother approached from behind, so he would not see. And that back door is purposeful. It's purposeful. It's where the twin Arjuna trees were. That's where the mortar was, and that's what Mother Jasoda bound him to. So when he pulled the mortar, the two trees fell over. So he's already outside. He's not in the storeroom anymore. Many times we see paintings of Krishna stealing butter, and you know there's all kinds of that's from chapter 8. Those stealing of the butter pastimes where there's rafters and the boys get on each other's shoulders and he uses a stick to poke a hole in the pot that's hanging from the rafter if he can't reach it. So the milk or the yogurt or the butter drips down and the boys are there capturing it with their mouth open. And all those pictures, that's from chapter 8. Now this is chapter 9, and he went into her storeroom, not their storerooms, and often we see the painting that she's holding a little, it's called a lati, you know, a little skinny stick, like, you know, the size of your finger, little thing. And she's holding it. What we hear is he's never seen her do that before. So he was surprised. And he showed his astonishment and thus his fear. Maybe she'll whack me. But it's not, you know, it's not a big stick, a little thing. But seeing that, just like, you know, sometimes when mothers are instructing their children, they won't use a stick, they'll use their finger. It has the same principle. She knows. But it's scolding. So she had no intention of hitting Krishna. It was what he wanted. The very beginning of this chapter is Sanatana Goswami says Krishna was not satisfied with the rasa of being scolded. He had tried it twice, and now he really wanted to make sure it happened. So he's doing something to make sure it's going to happen. But so it's his joy, but you know, so It's a mystery why a child wants to be scolded. It's another mystery if he looks fearful. And it's another mystery if he's just orchestrating the whole thing so he can feel fearful or have that relationship with Mother De Soto where she has to throw away the stick because she doesn't want to see him cry. He's crying. He's in fear. It's very mysterious. But it's filled with sweetness. That's the main emphasis that, according to what's said in the previous chapter, 8, in this chapter, up through verse 22, it's all a build-up for two verses, 21, 22, we'll get there, where the uniqueness of Mother De Soto's love, the superlative nature of Mother De Soto's love is described. Wherever there's love of mother for a child, that's very special. What to speak of the love of the residents, the elders, the elder gopis towards Krishna is super special, and superlative is the love of Mother De Soto, unequaled by anyone. Her parental love is very, very special. And that's what this pastime is glorifying. And there's details. So here's Sanatan Goswami with a detail. He was sitting carefully on top of an overturned mortar and was feeding the monkeys. The singular, or markaya, is used to represent the class of monkeys. So, in other words, the Sanskrit says he was feeding a monkey, but he was feeding monkeys because there's a whole group of a certain kind of monkeys. She approached from behind so he would not see her. Of course, he sees her eventually, and his fear was confirmed, and he starts running, and she's running after him. What a scene. And he allows her to catch him after some labor, when he sees her laboring so hard to catch him. But who can catch Krishna? Who can catch Krishna? We have this nice, there's a verse in Ishopanishad that says he can overcome all others running. And we have this description when Krishna's in Mathura, and after 21 times of Jarasandha coming with armies to destroy Krishna, he gets destroyed every time. Finally, the 22nd time, it's Kaliyavana, you remember his name? Kaliyavana, he lived in what is now Afghanistan, that was his kingdom. And Jarasandha was over on the other side, from your side. He was over in the east, and Mathura is over here, north. And Afghanistan is up here. So Kaliyavana was the king, the chief of the Yavanas. That was where they stayed, their kingdom. And so they converged on Mathura for a battle. And when Krishna saw them coming, you know what happened, right? Radha, you know what happened? Yeah? Krishna said to Balaram, there may be danger for the Yadu dynasty members. You hold off both armies. I'm going to arrange to take all the Yadu dynasty members to Dwarka. The Dwarka was built in a jiffy, and he transported them all, gave them all their residential quarters, and came back to the battlefield. And when he came to the battlefield, he went right onto the battlefield, and Kaliyavana had never seen him before, but he recognized him from description, and he started charging at Krishna for battle. We know what Krishna did. He ran from the battlefield. But he ran in such a way that Kaliyavana, he was just out of reach of Kaliyavana. So Kaliyavana tried to run a little faster. So Krishna ran a little faster, which just out of the reach of Kaliyavana. And he kept going like that. So Kaliyavana couldn't catch him, but Mother Yashoda could catch him. Even that he remained just out of the reach of Kaliyavana. That was also a transcendental potency of Krishna, because he could have just like disappeared and, you know, he's gone, or way ahead of him or whatever. But it was to encourage him to follow him so he could take him to the cave where Mushikunda was. These are potencies of Krishna that devotees who love Krishna appreciate how he extends his potencies in different ways suited for the situation. So with Mother Yashoda, he ran. And Mother Yashoda tried to catch him, but her body was much heavier. She wasn't accustomed to running. But she labored very devotedly, and Krishna allowed himself to be caught from behind. It's a beautiful pastime. She snuck up from behind. Even one acharya is saying she walked on her tiptoes. How graphic, because she didn't want Krishna to be to notice that she was coming. And her plan was to catch him from behind. But he turned and saw, and so he ran, and she caught him. It's the love of Mother Yashoda captures Krishna. That's the theme. She has nothing. Pure devotion. Well, this other thing we're going to be discussing tomorrow morning is specifically, it's discussing Rupa Goswami's definition of bhakti. Anyabhilashata shunyam jnanakarmadya navratam anukulyena krishna anushinam. That's tomorrow morning's class. So Mother Yashoda, her wanting to capture Krishna was also love. Krishna's becoming angry when she left him to go rescue the milk from the stove. Krishna bit his lips and was angry. It would sound like she's not doing what's favorable to Krishna. So she's lacking in bhakti. We'll hear it tomorrow morning again, but we can't say she's lacking in bhakti. We can't say she's lacking in bhakti. She, you know, but what she did was not pleasing to Krishna. But it was pleasing to Krishna. It just didn't look like it. Because he inspired her to do what she did so he could do what he did so we could have this whole Damodar Lila. Or like Arjuna, declining to do what Krishna wanted. Well, then that means Arjuna didn't have bhakti. We can't say Arjuna didn't have bhakti. But he was doing what he was doing because it was arranged by Krishna. So that's maybe, somebody may go, oh, you Hare Krishna people, you just get a brush that's white and you paint everything white and it looks nice. But it's the ways of love. It's said by our acharyas that the way of love is like the movements of a snake. That doesn't sound very complimentary, but the example is, if someone wants to go from point A to point B, you just go from point A to point B. But a snake doesn't do that. The snake goes like this to go from point A to point B. It doesn't move in a straight line. So love doesn't move like that. But there's one, you know, point A to point B, focus. Mother Yashoda's only focus is pleasing Krishna. So even when she's displeasing Krishna, she's pleasing Krishna. Because her intention is to please Krishna. You could say it negatively, she has no intention to displease Krishna. Whereas the demons, the other example we'll hear tomorrow morning, when the demons engage in combat with Krishna, he liked combat. So in that sense, they're pleasing him. But their attitude is not to please him. Their attitude is, you know, nasty, vicious, hateful, abominable. So that's not bhakti. So how to act in such a way, this is one of our mysteries. How to act in such a way that Krishna is pleased even when we don't exactly know what's going to be pleasing to Krishna. Right? How do we know what's going to be pleasing to Krishna? We're not perfected souls. We will have some other idea of what's pleasing to Krishna, perhaps, than what's pleasing to Krishna. So what do? You can't freeze. You have to do stuff. So the intention that Krishna should be pleased is at the foreground always. Anukulyena Krishna Anushilanam. We'll hear about it tomorrow morning. So let's see if there's some discussion. Damodar Leela. Radha has something. We can count on Radha for some questions. I'll keep reminding you gently about your tendency to say So gradually, just by nagging you lovingly. You'll check that tendency, maybe. Go ahead.
Does the Damodar Leela last many days? For example,
no, it's one day. It's a one-day pastime.
Then why do we celebrate it like a whole month if it's only
because
one day?
Because it's so nice. Although it took one day. It didn't even take the whole day. It started in the morning, and it was done by lunchtime. Because he knocked over the Arjuna trees. And Nanda Maharaj came home and saw the trees lying there. It was all the same day, half a day, three quarters of a day. Why a whole month? Because it's just a celebrated pastime. And we talked about why it's celebrated.
Thank you.
Okay. Anything?
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. So the question I had was, in the last section, you mentioned that Yashoda mother did something. It seems like it is disservice, but actually it is a service what Yashoda mother did in scolding or holding back Krishna. So with reference to that, I was wondering when Bhishma Dev was Bhishma Dev challenged Arjuna, and Krishna took up the arms which he was not supposed to in the battlefield. In that situation, was it Krishna who wanted Bhishma Dev to instigate him, or is it like Bhishma Dev wanted that chivalry rasa to be enjoyed by Krishna, or whose thought was it? Like,
it's mutual. Love is mutual. Krishna wanted and Bhishma Dev wanted. Bhishma Dev wanted to show the glory of Krishna, that he holds the love of his devotee above anything else, even his own word. Hmm. He holds the love of his devotee above everything else, even keeping his word. Bhishma Dev wanted to show that, because he knew he would protect Arjuna.
Hmm.
And he knew that Krishna had taken a vow, I won't fight. He'll break his vow, because bhaktavatsala.
Hmm.
I want to see that. I want the world to see that.
Wanted to glorify Krishna.
Yeah. He knew.
Thank you, Maharaj.
And Krishna wanted to have that chivalrous exchange with Grandfather Bhishma.
Hmm. Thank you, Maharaj.
Okay. Anyone else?
Not yet.
No. Do we have anything online?
Online?
Yes.
I can ask a question. So Guru Maharaj, on the topic of pleasing Krishna, so we generally hear...
Excuse me, I was just pausing. When you were starting to ask your question, my thoughts went to, so when it's time for me to scold my children, is that pleasing to Krishna? You weren't thinking that, but I was. What if he asked that question? Okay, go ahead.
So on the topic of pleasing Krishna, we generally understand it as yasya prasadat bhagavat prasado, by pleasing the spiritual master and following the instructions of the spiritual master, that's one way of pleasing Krishna. Other way of pleasing Krishna is carrying the intention in the normal course of our activities by asking the basic question, if I do this, would it be pleasing to Krishna? I'm just thinking, what are the various ways we can cultivate the mood of pleasing Krishna as we go through our, so to speak, chores and day-to-day activities.
I believe that the most effective way is quality chanting, because in this age of Kali, that's our primary means of deliverance. And the meaning that Prabhupada has given us of chanting is, please engage me in your service. So that mood of always being in Krishna's service comes most effectively from the quality chanting. So then the application of that quality chanting comes, guidance for that comes from scripture. So there, I'm sure you have, we all have, certain verses that resonate with us. Bhagavad Gita verses or Bhagavatam verses or prayers or something. And those prayers and the mood of those prayers, using Prabhupada's phrase, entering into the spirit of this hymn, speaking of the Brahma Samhita prayers, the spirit, so that's an instruction from the spiritual master, and by taking that instruction, you'll remember the prayers and you'll feel the mood of those prayers, which is for pleasing Krishna. So it's not precisely sloka memorization, it's entering to the mood of certain teachings, like one that's been working for me lately, or operative for me lately, is the first verse of chapter 7, Bhagavad Gita. Because somebody very kindly gave me a gift that I use at least 3 times a day, every day. And that's that little box that plays all Prabhupada's recorded lectures. And the one verse that Prabhupada spoke on more than any other verse from Bhagavad Gita is 7.1 Bhagavad Gita. So I just got fit through hearing, 25 classes on 7.1 Bhagavad Gita. And so, and that's an essence. The reason he spoke often because it's an essence verse. Maya sakta manak partha yogam yunjan larashaya. So that plays in my internal thought process in many cases throughout the day. Just being absorbed and being absorbed and being absorbed and being absorbed. That just comes just from hearing, not by sloka memorization. And then trying to, because it was, he said it with such, spoke about it with such vitality and vigor that it went in. And I want to go back and listen to that section again. So you carry the message and the mood of the message is with you. With attachment for Krishna. By madashraya, by taking shelter of Krishna, or those who have shelter of Krishna, madashraya. Yeah.
There are no questions popping up.
Okay.
Online. So first question is from Atulya. Maharaj, I understand why Krishna was angry in this pastime, but why was Mother Yashoda angry with him, and pleased that? And pleased her that changed her mood in the afternoon.
Well, she wasn't. What she didn't become specifically angry. She was feeling motherly affection. That I don't mind. Nanda Maharaj has so much butter and milk products. I don't mind. He's feeding to the monkeys. But stealing is not okay. Because if I let him go on with stealing, then when he grows up, he'll become a thief. So I can't let that. So I have to check him. It's the motherly affection. He wasn't angry with him. She was being a mother. Now, he wanted her anger. So binding it was a display of what one might look like angry. But she wasn't angry. She was being a mother. Okay. Something else?
Next question from Kokila Suresh Prabhu. How do we conquer anger, Maharaj?
How to conquer anger? According to Bhishma Dev, ultimately you become Krishna conscious and you've conquered anger. But then, the material kind. But what Bhishma Dev says is by forgiveness you can curb it.
Next question is from Amara Mantaji. Hare Krishna Maharaj. Today morning I had asked about the unsteady tendency of persons who swing between material and spiritual, and you had kindly responded by saying that this is material conditioning and unsteady devotion. Later I was thinking of the verse where Krishna says a person not too attached or not too detached is a good candidate for bhakti. Of this effect, sorry, I couldn't find the verse. That's the 11th canto verse. Can we relate between unsteadiness or swinging between material and spiritual and not being too attached or too detached from the material world?
Yes. But the steadying is both internal purity and holding fast to the instructions. That's where steadiness comes. Okay.
This is the last question.
That's it. Okay. Looks like we're about to wind up. Mm-hmm. Anything from our hosts? Hostess? Microphone? Microphone? Primary.
This is David.
Go ahead. You're very enthusiastic this time.
I'm just like really new. I'm just trying to realize what this means, bhakti yoga.
Oh.
And that's just like, thank you so much for introduce. And it's, I heard about stories, and what I'm just thinking, the more we talk about the stories, it's more about to kind of open our heart and
yes.
see more
yes.
the emotions, the actions, yes. and learn to love,
yes.
unconditional love,
you've
as I understand
it.
Well.
You got it.
And specifically in this period of time, Kartika months, right? Question is like, what we should read? You just like mentioned before, I just like missed Bhagavad Gita, or it's more about the, where is the Krishna, where is he became a child?
Are you speaking about at this stage of your bhakti?
Not
or
on
are
my
you
stage.
In this
on
particular
this
month?
Yes.
In this particular month?
Yes.
Okay. In this particular month, there's at least three things that would be, you know, nice. Is all over ISKCON, it's common to sing and then recite the translation of Dhamma Dharastika.
Mm-hmm.
And then in Krishna book, because there's a couple of children here, you can read the story in language they can understand, read the story and just become, it's basic, the story is basic, but it's as you described, it has potency to move the heart of appreciating the nature of spiritual love that's not even, it's approached by love of mother for child, but it's in another realm of love. And the potency in the story, so even children can appreciate the story part. And then, you know, a third is Srimad Bhagavatam, because what I just did is I not only read Prabhupada's purports, the verse and the purport, but other commentaries. So if you have Srimad Bhagavatam, or you can find out from the devotees, you can read, you know, access it online. You don't have to have a set of books, and you can read. So during the month of Damodar, those are three things. And share a little story. I don't know what part of the Russian-speaking world you're from, but I was once visiting during this month in the Ukraine. And we drove from Kyiv to Kharkov, and it's a long ride.
No. Yeah.
You're from Ukraine?
Yeah.
Okay.
I grew up in Ukraine.
Okay. So in the car with, you know, three of us, Naranjan Swami and somebody else and a driver and myself. So we got there in the evening. This is the month of Damodar. They purposefully had not made a big promotion. It was just like the friends and circle of friends. There were about 200 people there. It was an old building, big stone building, not heated. Everyone had their big hats on, their big coats on, and there they were offering lamps to Damodar, singing the Damodar Astakam song. 200 people that didn't know nothing about nothing. But it's so joyful. So and seeing this as you were doing, making offering of a lamp and offering of a lamp. So it's very nice. And, you know, the children will appreciate offering if you do it in a way it's safe. They offer a lamp. You know, do it in a way that it's safe. They're not going to burn themselves or anything else. And, you know, appreciate the meaning. And it's done in homes, in devotee homes all over the world for the month of Damodar. Sing the song. It's very short, you know, maybe 10 minutes. Sing the song, read the translation, offer a lamp while you're singing the song. And it's nice.
Are we going to do it?
We're not prepared this evening, but, you know, when we get to our destination, because it's a long drive getting back, we can send you the words. You know?
No, I have words.
Oh, you have the words.
Yeah.
Well, so the children can appreciate it's probably available in Russian as well, the Russian translation.
I have in Sanskrit and in Russian too.
Oh, good. Okay, so you can...
Our friends take care of us.
And then with the melody to use?
Yes.
You can, we'll make some arrangements so you know the melody to sing. You probably have it recorded in Russian, some singer, and you can just play it and sing along with them. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's different ways you can do it. Different ways you can do it. Once you get the hang of it, then it becomes just really sweet. 10 minutes. Yeah, the, you know, a picture of Mother Yasoda binding Krishna with rope. It's a classic in the whole month. Nice way to meditate on the sweetness of Mother Yasoda's love and the sweetness of Krishna's reciprocating with her love in his childhood pastimes. Two more questions. Okay.
So, next question is from Sudharma Sharma, Prabhu, Hare Krishna Maharaj. In this Kartik month, reflecting on the Mancha Kalpatarubhyascha, that verse, please explain how to sincerely beg forgiveness from devotees.
From your heart. I mean, how to be sincere is the question. How to be sincere is the question. So you be sincere by being sincere. That's Prabhupada's answer to that question. And you don't just, it's not lip deep, but it's heart deep. When you say you're requesting forgiveness, it's, and be ready for anything. Be ready that they'll say, okay, no problem, you're forgiven. Or forget it, you know, you're a rascal. Or they could say anything in between. There's nothing they could say, there's nothing to ask forgiveness for. Wait, why are you speaking like this? There's nothing wrong. So don't be attached to a result is the point. You know, I want a certain response from the other side, and if that other response from the other side doesn't come, I may again feel disappointed. So don't have expectation, just from your heart, genuinely, seek forgiveness for something.
Next question is from Uttam Bhakta Prabhu. I have heard a few times here locally that milk boiling over in the kitchen while Mother Yashoda was feeding Krishna wanted to commit spiritual suicide. Is that mentioned in our Acharya's comments?
Yes. It's not common, but it's mentioned. The mention is made that everything in the spiritual world is conscious. An example of this is when Krishna enters the forest playing upon his flute, calling the cows, the flute sound is heard by even inanimate entities, the rocks, the rivers, and so forth, and they respond to the flute sound. So even inanimate objects, they're conscious. Anyway, as I answered his question, I lost track of the question.
Yeah. Yeah, that's all he has.
Okay. That's it? Okay. Radha has one more.
I actually have a comment on...
A comment?
Yeah.
Okay.
On her question.
A comment to her question.
So, there's a site called Amala Bhakta Narrations.
I can't hear you with your mask on.
There is a site called Amala Bhakta Narrations.
Amala Bhakta Narrations.
Yeah, and it has books, and including the Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita and Lilamrita and
everything.
All that stuff.
Ramayana,
yeah.
And everything.
Yes, and it's really good for children and for people who want to hear just naturally. So it's a good site.
So you show her how to find it at the end. At the
maybe
end.
Later. Maybe after the class.
After the class, right, at the end. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki?
Jai.
Shri Shri Radha Damodar ki?
Jai.
Gaur Premanandi.
Thank you.